You are listening to Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. It's Dwayne.
Hey.
It's Niall.
Hey, Fever. Sorry, I have it.
Yes, I know. Same here. And it's me, Brian. And on this episode, we are covering the anime that aired the week of the 18th of May, 2020 to the 24th of May, 2020. And we're going to kick things off with Super Shiro, episode 32, The Show Off Sing Off. In which I was correct, they have to sing a song to open a cave. And you have to be a good enough singer to do it.
Just like in the Bible.
So, yeah, that's pretty much the entire episode, is various characters attempting to open the cave by singing.
Don't even get to hear any of what Deckapu can do, really.
He didn't even get a fucking shot.
Yeah.
Clearly he's not going to be a good singer, but yeah, I get it.
Yeah, this got some kind of built-in judging magic here. If you don't do a good enough job or hit the wrong notes, you get smushed by a rolling boulder.
Which, yeah, our fucking investigator neglects to mention until after Shiro has done his number. Actually, I was kind of expecting your man to do a song, but to sing as the dog trying to sing, I was like, that's some good voice acting. Did a damn fine job there.
Akio Otsuka's the inner voice, so you can't have that. It has to be.
I know, but he'd have the better singing voice, I feel.
Well, went the right direction. Go for a really, really sad sounding Enka number, and it sounds like your voice is kind of old and it's cracking under all of the sorrow and melancholy.
With all the emotions, or the fact that you're a small dog and that's your singing voice. Orla the Crow, surprisingly good.
Yes,
he's all right.
Yeah, to the point where I was like, who plays him?
Yeah, him.
Maybe someone who is actually a singer. Yeah, could be.
Then Can-Can turns up, of course, because, hey, she's the starlet of Kasukabe.
I feel like she's only winning through, auto-tune, but, I mean, like, it's working. She should have brought an extension cord was the problem.
Yeah. Well, it's also just not going to... She's going to come along and sing, but, you know, it isn't going to go into the cave and retrieve the bone, because can someone else do it? I'm too pretty to go in there.
Whoever gets her the bone will get her undying love. So the lads are obviously enamored as soon as she appears. Mm. And I'd say they wrestle over it, but they're too distracted by love, so they just pretty much spin until Deckapu gets locked in the cave for all eternity, I presume.
Yep, he's dead now. sealed in there. He will come again the third day.
And then we get Shiro trying to... it's like, oh, but she wants the bone. She's saying hurry up, but it's not really heroic to give someone the thing that would make them president of the world.
Mm. Got to resist. A hero can't be swayed by all of these base urges. He has to fulfill his duty.
I did like the way your one was like, you know, it'll explode if it's not the real bone. He's like, what does it even matter anymore?
I don't care. I'm turning in my badge.
We didn't even get to see him press that button. It just immediately explodes. It's great.
Yeah. It was recognition to part, this whole can-can, forlorn, melancholy romance thing going on, but it just seems like fun. I don't give a fuck anymore. The bow is going to blow up in my face anyway. Why am I doing this every week? Why am I doing this to myself?
It nearly sounds like resignation as to his lot in life, yeah.
I believe it's Setsuji Sato, who is not known for singing, so it just turns out he's got a good singing voice.
Yeah. I mean, maybe it's the acoustic, the guitar, and the mouth organ kind of thing, but it's like, no, it was a good number. What was it about eating cheese puffs? No, not cheese puffs, cream puffs or something. Yeah, yeah.
How the hell could a bird play harmonica? It hasn't got lips.
How's it playing the guitar?
Well, obviously, because you're going by the cartoon rules, is no, the wings become a hand with the fingers. That makes logical sense, Dwayne. What's he taping
sure,
for?
Okay.
The current voice of Tom in Tom and Jerry.
There's a new going, Tom and Jerry?
Ah!
making all the noises. Yeah, it's a good gig.
It's probably in the TV show where they talk.
Yeah.
No, they redub it every year.
And the voice of Bob in Minions. There you go. And unfortunately for his career, he seems like he's not too much of a problem, but it looks like he was the regular voice of TJ Miller when people were giving TJ Miller work. Moving on, we've got Woodpecker Detective's Office. Honeysuckle. I was getting to the uck part of honeysuckle before I was getting out of the woodpecker word. So this carries on from the previous episode. A famous actor has been murdered. He's had his throat ripped out by a puppet. Oh.
Karakuri Circus.
Yeah, kind of.
The oldest crime in the world. Man murdered by puppet.
Yes. And then the puppet's gone missing. And
it's on the run, obviously, on the lam.
The person arrested is the... have they got married, or is they just going to get married?
It's her fiancé, I think it is.
Yes, the waitress from the previous episode. And she asks Yoshi's help to prove that her husband's innocent, or her fiancé's innocent, and that it was the puppet what done it.
But he doesn't get a chance to respond before our boy, who's working part-time at the cafe because he can't scam money off his friend... he's like, I'll take the case.
Yes. I've sold loads of cases. He sold one case.
And he didn't get paid for it because he got your guy thing. And again, I'm questioning whether he got paid for this one as well.
The other case he solved, the child who he gets to help out, solved. This
one. Yeah.
And to be fair for him...
I mean, he got paid for it, so it's still a successful job by his standards.
He did solve this case, but the thing I love about this episode... and the crime is quite good. It's a fairly simple one. It turns out that the waitress did it herself because the actor was a deviant who was having sex with these puppets. And he was attracted to her because she had an artificial eye.
See, I picked up on the eye thing. I thought that, when they zoomed in on that dude's scar on his chin, I was like, okay, that's an obvious plant. But when they kept showing her, they showed the light reflecting differently in both her eyes. And I was like, okay, there's something up with her eye. But I hadn't put one on one as is she wearing a false eye? And it's like, oh, he'd be into that because he's into puppets, as is clear early on.
And he'd been making her fiance go and fetch this puppet from,
It's like a waxwork museum kind of thing. It's like depictions of really cool puppets.
It's like a chamber of horrors, is what it is.
Yeah.
It's like here are some puppets in terrible, scary positions. Yoshi thinks it's the manager of the puppet show, because it turns out he's right.
Recently, he shaved his beard, and I paid off one of the guys there, and he was saying that the manager is like, oh, I bet you're getting more money now. More punters are coming in to see the murder puppet. And he's like, actually less, because the manager doesn't let us stay after hours. I'll bet he's fucking pretending to be her and going around at night as a murder puppet to boost revenue for punters coming in.
Which says that he is, but he's not the culprit.
That's an entirely unrelated thing. It's not technically a crime.
Unless
cross-dressing was still a crime, then it probably was, to be fair.
I don't think it was. Well, maybe it was, because that's...
In public, is my thinking, yeah.
Yeah.
Because he's running around the town as a pretend murder puppet, basically.
I'm thinking maybe it was, or had recently been, because that was specifically part of that... that Rowley song that I played at Mad Stravaganza is in reference to... A big act of civil disobedience where men dressed as women and women dressed as men and people just can't wear any clothes at all.
Okay.
It generally caused a ruckus.
Sounds like a good ruckus, yeah.
Yeah, so the best bit though is, Ishiyama's figured out the waitress did it, so he gets Edgar Rampo, as he will be, to deliver her a note telling her that... He's figured out who did it, and so she realizes, oh no, if he's figured out who did it, and he's a great detective, as he claimed, that he must have figured out I've done it, and so therefore I'm going to have to murder him as well.
Yeah, she figures, like, come to this at this time, and I'll tell you who did the crime. And she's kind of thinking, like, this is to fucking catch me.
Yes.
Which it was, but not in the way she expected, I suppose.
But the pair of them are so good. The bit, the reveal is, he just wants to do the reveal. And he at no point has he thought of what's going to happen afterwards, of how they're going to arrest her.
He has a plan perfectly. Like, he was messing around with one of the puppets earlier, and he's like, hey, man, stop messing around with that puppet. And he's like, no, these puppets are really lifelike, aren't they? This guy's as handsome as me. He looks exactly like me, wouldn't you say? And it's like, haha, I'll set up the puppet. So she runs in and stabs the puppet. And then I'll be like, I'll say that exactly as, you did the murder. And she'll be like, no, I did the murder. And she'll be crying. But she's still a murderer, yes. And she still just has to pull that knife out of the puppet, and you guys are in trouble.
And Yoshi's,
you didn't think further than the big dramatic bit where she accidentally stabs a puppet.
And Yoshi's thing is, well, she'll repent, she'll serve her time for doing the crime, and then when she,
I'll wait for you however long it takes, yes. Baby. Yeah.
Not thinking that, no, she's doing this because she's in love with the other man. And so, you know, these complete romantics, entirely unsuitable. They may be able to solve a crime, but they're entirely unsuitable for bringing a criminal in.
Yeah, so it's almost like the detective work and police work are two different fucking disciplines.
And so when she gets a knife out, and they're continually pushing each other in front of the knife. No,
it's like, well, you hired me. It was like, oh, technically you work for me, so you take the fucking knife first.
Our linguist friend, who's not been in it the entire episode, throws a rock through the window. And
he's been in the entire episode. What are you talking about? He's been lurking the entire fucking episode. Creeping around.
Yeah, and makes it look like the police have arrived. And
because the first thing the police do when they said, police, freeze, is they throw a rock through the window and then shout it through the hole.
Yes, but that gives them opportunity to grab her and pull her to the ground. Until the real police get here. And it turns out, even though he'd fallen out with him, we also learn to see that Edgar Allan Poe is also there, because he had read the letter that he would be given to deliver, and he was interested to see how it would all turn out.
He was like, wow, that was pretty exciting. That was worth skipping homework for.
Yes. so we see that, it's... He's not as bad as he made out he was last week with him. He's still concerned about, particularly because clearly, yes, if there wasn't somebody looking out for him, he would die.
He'd be dead right now, yeah.
I do like how it's the balance of presenting these as being great writers, which they never stop presenting them as great writers, but then pointing out that just because you're a great writer, you wouldn't necessarily be good at doing other things.
Well, I mean, they point out they're great writers. They're constantly popping off fucking poems and shit to make themselves like, wow, you just fucking came out that top of your head. That's really cool. So they're really smart and really good at poetry. And also, they're actually pretty good at detectives. Your man came to the wrong conclusion about who the murderer was, but he was 100% right about what the manager of the waxworks place was doing. So they are smart, but it's just like, they don't have any follow through, and they have these big romantic ideals which get in the way of the reality that they're correct about deducing.
Yeah. And the other fellow has already left town, so because they're wondering, like, how we're going to tell him that the woman he'd fallen for was a murderer, and they're like, well, by the time he gets back here, he'd have fallen in love with somebody else by that point, so don't have to worry too much about it.
Also, he, like, wrote a poem that seemed to be him giving up on it, and it's like, oh, he's probably good then.
Okay, tell me all about Fruits Basket Season 2, Episode 7. Let's start the watermelon splitting contest.
Yeah, we can start doing it now, because other people have turned up, like Shigure is here, and Hattori's coming along, and a few of us might show up as well. But also, Kureno, and then, well, of course, Akito is here, so you got... Some of the long spoiled all the fun. Before managed to get Yuki by himself and just like to stare away from us and probably whisper something very, very cruel and brutal into his ear. You know, like, you know, they're a dick.
I don't think you literally hear what, he says. It's just, you kind of get something on the lines of, it does, like, oh, you thought you could Because, I mean, like, even on first greeting, it was like, hey, walking all alone. Oh, you were always a lonely child. How pathetic you are and that kind of shit. And I was just like, Jesus, that's how you're going to say hello?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a jerk. It's a big old jerk.
But the kids are getting some melons because they want to have some fun for all that anyway. Just got the news that Heroes, ma'am, she's having another baby. It's like, oh, it's so exciting. Oh, he could have a little brother or a sister. That'll be great.
They're treating him like he's a new dad, which is really funny.
I'm so happy for you.
Congratulations. What are you going to call the kid? And he's like, it's a brother. I don't get a fucking say. What the hell are you talking about?
Yeah. Or they keep going on and getting excited about that and toss right back again to that same little shit saying, what did you keep talking about your mam for? What are you always talking about your mam for? And she's kind of stopping herself from blurting out anything, even though she talks about her mam and learn everything she knows about life. And there's often some kind of nice little happy lessons from there. She's kind of keeping that in because she's still feeling bad about it, which is crap. Feels even crapper then when they're all kind of called away. Then, oh, Akita wants to see all the Soma people. Well, as they know, for a little meeting right there. You don't have to come, Kyo. Cats don't need cats.
The cat doesn't get to go to the meeting, like in the story.
He said, that's fine. I don't care. Akita's a dick. Well, I'll stay here.
So yeah, it's himself and Toru left behind basically. And she's trying to make light of it again, but he's trying to go and like, dude, what the fuck are you hanging back with? And basically, she doesn't really know what anyone's family kind of life is like, so she's worried that by constantly bringing up her mom, who she loved and loved her very much, she's like, yeah, I know a lot of you guys have a lot of fucked up situations regarding parents and stuff.
Mm.
Like, Kyo starts to talk about it. It's like, well, I'm estranged from my dad. I haven't talked to him in years. And my mother died in an accident.
Yes, that'll do.
Yeah, and it's kind of like, yeah, there is a lot of fucking family issues there, but he's not going to hold it against her for, like, her having a good relationship with her parent, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And none of the other guys would either. They're not dicks, like.
Exactly, yeah. It's another, like, seeing more about the way, the particular way that Toru and Kyo are close. Because she's very polite and doesn't want to offend anybody, but he can see straight to it. And he won't, like, bullshit her as well. He wants to, like, get down to brass tacks about what's bugging her or what's bugging him.
He's seemingly stopped, he's refusing to let her put other people in front of herself to her own detriment. It's like, don't fucking put yourself on the back burner. That's not good for you.
Yeah. It's kind of contrasted then with how you see Yuki views her in his mind.
Yeah.
As you see the scenes of her, it's like, you know, a lot of the younger kids, they've dozed off. So she's, see her inside, and she's thrown a blanket on top of them, and he's just kind of gaping at her through the window. He's like, oh man, she's so lovely and nice to everybody. Would she be that? She's so lovely and nice to me as well. It's like, it's a much more different side dynamic.
It's like he's viewing her niceties from the outside and trying not to get involved, whereas Yuki is specifically getting involved to for Toru's benefit more so than his own.
Kyo's getting involved. Yuki's
sorry. Yeah, I said it backwards. My bad.
Yeah. Akira was all of them inside, you know, just for, you know, just to fucking stir shit and lord it over them. It's like, oh, it's so lovely, now nice to see you. Also, Akira was in a bad mood because had to come all the way here and tired and out in the sun too much. He got a headache. And like, guys, come on, when the fuck is Akira not in a bad mood? Like,
Akira brought his what would you call it, like au pair fucking kind of guy.
Parent, oh yeah.
Yeah, who has to go, who's told, you fucking wait in the dark room when I fucking call you kind of shit, so that's fucked up.
Yeah. But he's just like lording it over him there, it's like, you know, gloating, oh, I met Yuki on the way here, and I had a few choice words for him, I tell you why, stopping the fucking deluding himself about getting out of this. He's not getting away from me. He's under my thumb for keeps for good, but it's fun to watch him squirm around and think he's free. Anyways, it's lovely to see you. Kiss, kiss. I'm going to go and gloat at the younger children now, whatever the hell I do with them.
Yeah, just shitty fucking, just shitty comments trying to belittle them, trying to make them feel bad. Like, even when they're walking towards it, like, a rabbit kid is kind of like, I'll be much happier once I can get back because Toru's fucking lovely and I like living with her and I'll get through this moment of shittiness because I know I'll be treated like shit by him, so. But he was happy enough to go, like, eh, it'll be fine. We'll get through it.
Yeah.
So you can see, like, their opinion on this piece of shit that controls their lives completely changing is like, this is only temporary inconvenience, really.
Exactly, yeah. Like, Hattori has Shigeru pegged upon. You're just trying to stir shit up, aren't you? You're just trying to, like, start something. And it's like, that's fucking right, because I'm trying to break out this thing. I want to fucking escape this fucking monotony of this living like this, under this curse, and then I got to fucking be fake to this fucking idiot who was the head of the family somehow. I hate this guy.
I did like the way Hattori was like coming back with the, it's like, yeah, well, at least you're trying to do something about it. I'm just trying to live in this mess. I'm not actually trying to actively make it better.
Yeah. And as well, this is going on, what actually was going on about Yuki's looting himself before. Sure, I'm here trying to stir shit up, whether he knows about it or not. And Yuki, you know, I can see he's like coming more into himself as well, and he's not going to be that scared little kid anymore. So who is the real delusional person in this family?
Yeah, and obviously him saying that is Toru goes out looking for Yuki, because obviously he hasn't been back since they were palling around earlier, and he went for his walk and met that prick. But, you know, she's kind of worried, and she's kind of running around trying to look for him. But she just kind of randomly meets him on the beach, and, like, unlike, because she's worried, like, the last time he met the head of the fucking family, he was, basically had, like, a panic attack for ages, didn't
yeah.
he? But this time he's grand. He's actually okay. He's dealing with it remarkably well. And you can see how much he's changed as a person based off his demeanor and the things he's saying. It's like he can see a better future for himself.
Yeah, he's letting the lid off. He says his own words and he's allowing his vulnerabilities to show. And he's just saying, thanks for being around and sticking with me and listening to me. You know, despite me letting these vulnerabilities show, you didn't just cast me aside as soon as I opened up this little bit to you, so and let's make me kind of less afraid. I met Akito, but I'm grand about it because I know there's something beyond this, and it's making me think as well. You know, you're here with me now, but also even back then in this little memory that I won't tell you about right now. But you were the person who showed me that, in spite of what I was being told, about all the belittling, all of the hate, all the fucking hatred and cruel comments, there was somebody who I helped and things were better for me being there, and you were that person and these kind of stuff. But there is some kind of note of melancholy to this, where it feels like, oh, I'm so happy to have you around and be here, but I feel so sad. You know, he's saying this more to himself internally, because you get the sense that he's out and about and he's free now. He's realizing this because it feels like it's coming along too late and his time is running out for whatever reason. He feels that there's some kind of clock being put on it now.
Yeah.
So it's probably like, once they get into their last year of school now, and what's going to happen when, without, like, I suppose, this arrangement, whatever it is, would be finished, and he has to go back indoors into the dark again.
And I mean, like, in that way, he's kind of mirrored with Kyo, who has a very different thing on that, but who is on a clock, basically.
Yeah. So, yes, there's been the kind of ratcheting up of the pressure of the states, but there is this sort of, it wouldn't call it outright like peril, but there is this dread that's, no, it's creeping in. It's always
a looming dread. Sure.
It's always in this fucking nice summer holiday episode where they go to the beach and all of this fucking outpouring of grief and sorrow. But it's good. You can really tell that, it's building up this momentum. You know, it's like a fucking tidal wave. It's going to start off really, really small, but it's going to build and build, and it's going to smash into everything, before long. Nice ominous feelings. I like that.
Right. Next up, we've got, when I can find my list of things, Tower of God, episode 8, Kun's strategy. Now, I watched this episode, but I'm still going to have to say, guys, explain it to me.
I was kind of watching it, and I was like, we're not going to have helped with the fucking thing in this episode.
Okay, but this, like, there's so many even names flying around. It's not just, like, the team of three. Now we've had these, but it's like supporting characters who we've, you know, encountered in previous tests as friends or foes or everything in between. So you have an idea of who they are. But now they've all been jumbled around and they're in two teams. They're playing a big game of tag against one of the tower's instructors, who is way OP.
I think we've got the rules kind of wrong before. They have one person who's 8, and that person, obviously, as they say in this episode, wears the badge. And if the instructor can tag him, like get him, get the badge, I think it is, then they lose. But there is like some sort of point system, and some people are just like, yeah, I already have enough points. I don't need to pass this test, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yes, that's a kind of it too. And as well, like the instructor, Quant, he has like a badge on him as well. And I presume if you can take his, then you wouldn't, well, thing is though, if he's way OP, so how the fuck are you even going to touch him to land a hit in him to hit that off him?
So it's more so working together to get your guy through the safe, to the safe zone, to the den, whatever kid term you used to use for playing tag.
Yeah. So Kun's first plan, you know, was kind of do a secret attack, didn't seem to work out. So I'm just going to, and like you fucking peg a leg or you go up the lift and, cause there's a lift, you can go right to the top if you can get to it. And, that'll force him to go up the stairs and we'll send every other, lad we have at them to try and slow him down and buy you time.
That's part of his plan. He's hoping to get 5 minutes out of that.
Yeah. And which Quant handy is just decimating them at all. They, you know, they got the numbers and, you know, and to the extent they got some like skilled, participants, players in there, but they're nothing against him. He just breezes through them with no problem. Gets right up to the top and Anak is, out of lift, running across the bridge, going to get in the safe zone. But meets Kun up there on the bridge and they like initiate their little gambit. Kun being like the light bearer, he has this like floating cube, which is like computer, kind of virtual computer thing, I guess, to can forward to his plan.
Yeah, you saw like a pink one floating around. Like there's a few guys who are that class, let's call it, I guess, who get those flying cubes they can analyze data in and shit.
Yeah, but otherwise a very handy floating box you can fly around on. So they pop Anak onto that and then just like leave him levitating under the bridge. Quant appears.
I think it's a copy of his cube, so it doesn't look like he's lost his cube or anything, like your man points out, because they couldn't copy the badge, but there's no reason he can't copy the cube with his magic Mary Poppins bag.
Yes. So Quant shows up of, hey, buddy, where's your badge? Like, where's your tag? Where's your ace? Where are you going? Oh, it's gone up ahead in the bridge. Is that so? Well, I don't think so. It couldn't have gotten away from me that easily. If I didn't know any better, I'd say you've probably done something like you're hanging around lurking below the bridge down there or something like to that effect. Is that correct? Oh, I wouldn't know. I'm the seer part of the team. I'm trying to buy time for my buddy. Well, how about this? How about if we jump over the side, and you land and everyone goes as fast as a panic, well, let's just go see if she's down there.
Well, I think he's suggesting, like, if he splats at the bottom, then the cube turns off because the cube is based on his power. So then she will also go splat and you'll automatically lose as well. Mm-hmm. Also, it's just like just a real kind of fuck you move. It's like, I can pull you off this cliff and we'll fucking see what's what.
Yeah.
But then he does a very Joseph Joestar move involving rope.
Yeah, they've engineered actually the cube to be attached to some kind of pulley system utilizing Anak's whip sword. And this flies back up out of danger that way.
He goes down and is still hanging on to the rope, and she goes back up, and your man goes fucking loose to the bottom. So he's automatically lost, and the team B are kind of, well, one of them's cheering in the room, and everyone kind of gives him a dirty look. I did like that. It was like, oh, he did it! He's like, dude, fucking, they're the enemy in this test. We want them to lose. Pay attention. Yeah. Read the room.
But I actually didn't pay attention, because somehow, even though she's right before the goal, Quant appears, dashes right up to her, nabs her badge, game over, done. How did they do that? Defeat from the jaws of victory, what's going on? Had to be a setup. But Kunasis says, no, sorry lads, I underestimated him. I did my best and I tried to organize as best I can, and we all did a really good job, but it was
probably like they were all like, hey, don't worry buddy, you like tricked him twice. I mean, that's pretty fucking good. We just couldn't count on how crazy OP he is.
Yeah, he's super good, you know. It couldn't have been an inside job. He's just that good. Flashback to about 10 minutes earlier. He's down the bomb going, shit, those little bastards tricked me. We could help you out there, Quant. Was that? Hey, it's Laurel, the fella in the sleeping bag. You can use magic.
Fell asleep at the start of this test and didn't move from it. But that was part of their plan, I guess.
And Kun is there too. So how's about this? So I can help you out here. You know, look pretty bad if an instructor, you know, was lost out to these upstarts. You know, it looked pretty bad. But my buddy here can magic you up straight up there and you can save some face. You know, sounds like a good idea too. He's like, why are you doing this? Ah, sure. Anybody I like, they've already gotten the points to succeed already, so they don't need to be passing this test. But I got some friends in the other team who I might want to get a little bump up so they can go up the tower with me, continue on with me. So I hope, you know, by still charader, if you've given them enough clues to maybe help them form a plan of their own in the next tag game, without needing my help, because he figures I'm the brains of the operation. Without me, those dummies won't be able to pass that test and won't be able to figure out a way to beat you. So I hope I've relayed enough information by our experience they can succeed.
That they
themselves.
Can figure out what to do a little better. Like, yeah, I like the idea that basically he's throwing this test because him and everyone else who's going to lose this test already has enough points. Him and everyone he wants to win this test already has enough points to progress. Whereas everyone in the other test doesn't necessarily, so he has to throw the match so that they can win the match.
Yeah. And I'd say more importantly than all of that, you now have one of the instructors who owes you a favor.
Yeah, that's probably pretty handy.
Yeah.
Hmm. It's a weird show, man.
Yeah, you know, this is all kind of based entirely onto this fairly simple little game or test, but it's the layer of complexity you bring into it yourself that gets gets the real mute of it, real juice of it. So yeah, I expected some kind of chicanery from Kuhn. I was expecting something like that, but I was interested now to see, okay, what are they going to do for other lads in their exam to beat this guy? Probably it might involve Bam just accessing some hidden ability of his own and is blown the dude away, which I hope it will not.
I'm kind of hoping it doesn't do. He's just the legendary Super Saiyan. He's got all the cool shit. I'm kind of hoping it's a bit smarter than that, because when the show is smarter than that, I feel like it works quite well.
Yeah. Because in Dorsey and Rachel, quote unquote, in there as well. So it might be all like something a little bit more sophisticated.
Hmm.
Yeah. It's a still entertaining enough silliness, you know. This wasn't like a contest necessarily of strength. It was about, you know, all of the parameters that have been defined already. It's how you think on your feet within that situation, rather than pulling something out of your arse, which I hope they don't do. Don't do that kind of, because they've been good at kind of keeping it very consistent for most of it, except in things involving BAM, where he's, whatever secret heritage or destiny he has. No, but given like seeing the rest of these characters a chance to show off what they can do as well, it's become like a good deal more of an ensemble piece. Not many episodes in, to be fair, and it's done a good job to make me like invest in it then to that extent, even considering there's so many like little characters I want to see a little bit more of. So good going on that, Matt.
It was incomprehensible coming in, and a lot of the character designs are very lacking.
It really amuses me, like when that dude who was like an angel in a t-shirt shows up and he's just like, "I'm gonna punch you," and he's like, "Dude, what the hell? You're a spirit around." I was like, "I don't even know this character. I've never seen this generic looking motherfucker before." If you're not a main character, it's very clear from your design you're not a main character. There's still some fucking weirdos in there. But most of them aren't huge standouty. Yeah.
Yeah, but even like a fun character like Rack, big dinosaur, spirit from a man who loves Mars bars, is just on the sidelines in this section of it for the last while. So like, bring him back. We need him. We need his energy back in the room here.
Hmm.
And his mate is also eating loads of chocolate bars.
So apparently the big heavy guys just like to, like, I guess like protein fucking pack or whatever. Yeah.
Got a carbo load for
an Yeah, that's
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
I'm not sure we're going to be watching another episode of this.
Well, you will come in at a bad time, because like, there's a lot of things flying around right now. It's a lot to untangle.
I'm just looking at the wiki. It doesn't look like it gets any less dense with characters as it goes along.
I'm fine with the density, because I feel like, and I don't mean this to take the piss out of the show, I don't think there's too much depth to a lot of the characters, especially like a lot of the randos in there, but even the main characters, not too much going on with them, but there's so many different interplays between them that I think it makes it interesting enough. And like, much like the show itself, like, here's a simple thing. You're playing a game of tag, but then you make it very complicated by playing games within games. And it's like, I'm doing this to get the other guys to win so that I can do a thing later on. And it's just like, that's kind of where the show is smarter. It brings complexity to a very simplistic thing.
Yeah, I was looking at this page called Team Balm, seeing this is the current Team Balm, and there's 19 people listed.
Yeah. Well, most of them are just cannon fodder, who just dare to get swatted aside by, just so you can see how the penalties or the tests work, you know, or what your kind of power you're up against. I mean, I'm not expecting off-brand Zolo to
do anything
to get any much backstory to his character. But he's if he's a guy that gets smashed into a wall, he's almost there for you.
When we see, I can't think of her names, your woman with the knife, her backstory, where it's like, yeah, I was a thief. Then all my friends got murdered by one of those fucking badass dudes, and then that god of the tower appeared and was like, hey, you want to get the fuck out of here right now? Go to the top of the tower? And I took my chance, and I was like, oh, that's your entire backstory, I'm guessing. We're not probably going to get much more with you, which possibly means you're going to be killed soon.
Yeah.
But that, in another show, that would be the way of it. But I feel like that's about as much as you're going to get from her, but you might get some development and inter-character stuff.
Rightio. Then we've got Wacky TV, Episode 6, Super Deluxe 5G Communications. Which
topical
is entirely the gang reading letters from their boss being delivered by carrier pigeon. I didn't look at whether this is a genuine carrier pigeon brand.
Oh, like a breed or whatever. Yeah.
Which turned out to be very, costing like 50,000 yen for each pigeon, and then by the end of the episode, there's like tens of pigeons on board the boat.
Yeah, because they used to send a pigeon for every message, and I was like, take care of those pigeons, and like, we have to feed the pigeons? It seems like it'd be less expensive to just give us phones back.
No, this is the best way that I can lecture you, and about how to use your equipment and plan things efficiently, and not waste money.
My favorite joke was when he sent like the text by pigeon, and I was like, "So anyway," and he's like, the guy's like, "I feel really bad for that pigeon." It's like just throw that fucking paper away.
And also, we should mention that often they are real pigeons, just green screened into the cartoon.
Well, they have the footage from the first season because the monster they were trying to find had the head of a pigeon, so because they had got tapes lying around, we can upcycle these.
Maybe it's a joke on that's the more expensive part to green screen in those pigeons on top of the bananas.
It does, probably as well. You know, it's just like the most, because it's just like the banana dude's just reading letters, isn't the most thing, but it's the pigeons coming in, the very detailed, stamp brand on their legs.
But yeah, in general, it is their boss just complaining about cost cutting measures and maybe how they're affecting him rather than how they're affecting our heroes.
Like initially he's pointing out, oh, it sucks because you can't pay for taxis and you don't get the phones and no fucking drinking party. So I get a drink at home like an asshole.
Yeah. I know, man. When you get on the work from home setup, you got to make sure your own fridge is full of beer for once.
And he's telling them stuff like, ship's really good, right? And they're like, the ship broke down. It's like, yeah, it's really cost effective, but don't call any emergency services because that would destroy the company. Because you're not in travel insurance. And it's like, I got a tickly throat though. They're all really worried that they don't have health insurance or travel insurance or any fucking coverage, like phone coverage or otherwise in this scenario where they're trapped in the ocean in a broken boat.
Mm.
Then we got listeners, episode 8, The Real Me, in which we get Echo and Moo's side of the story from last week's episode. This is a three-part...
So they were there the whole time. Okay.
A three-part story. As they're wondering, we open up with them wondering how they're going to get to Londinium, when sure enough, the forces of Londinium arrive to take them there.
I did like that. It's like, oh, it'll take us like a few weeks or whatever if we fly on the robot. And it's like, oh, if we could fly on an airplane, that would get us straight there. It's like, what?
Right. How convenient.
So we're taken to the Watchtower. And we meet Sally Simpson and Tommy Walker. And Marshall Ace. And basically, once again, Echo and Moo get split up. Apparently Tommy has a plan and they need Moo's help. They're going to hold a play at Christmas and use that to open up the gates into the Earless's world so that Jimmy can come back. And
it feels like it's some sort of discussion on like a religious thing. Like if we reenact the scenes of his life leading up to when he disappeared, we'll be able to bring him back. Like what do they call that in fucking religion? Transubstantiation or something like that?
Transubstantiation.
Substantiation. Thank you. I couldn't think of the fucking word. It's like, yeah, we'll make it a real thing, basically.
Echo is set to work maintaining the equipment, and he runs into his old friend Marshall. Because, hey, if you've cast Sugar Achiever as a character, you might as well bring them back multiple times.
You know he's good for it.
Yes.
He needs the money so badly.
And, yeah, so he's a nomadic equipment mender, along with the rest of his crew. And, yeah, they're just basically Marshall Amps in this, not even hiding it at this point.
Yeah, yes.
But the gist of the episode, though, is not so much Tommy's nefarious plan that is revealed towards the end. It's basically Moo and Echo not voicing their feelings to each other, or really, they're kind of working out their feelings to each other. Because they both are like, Moo seems like hesitant, and like, oh, if I bring my brother back, then this journey's over. And like, Echo's...
Then the show's over, we're done the show. Yeah, Echo's just like, oh, I want to meet him. It's like, and she's like, hey, what do you want to do when you meet him? I was like, ask his autograph?
Yes.
He hasn't really thought beyond. It's like, yeah, but yes. Then we're done. We don't have a reason to hang out. We don't have a reason to do any of this cool shit we've been doing.
Yeah. And so he's prompted by Marshall to, think about his feelings and then tell, Moo what his feelings are. He doesn't get a chance because Tommy has a nefarious plan that he has not spelt out to Marshall Ace, the former pilot, who has a really great wheelchair.
Oh, it's so fucking cool!
It's the most modern wheelchair you've ever seen.
It's basically like, well, I retired from being a fucking mod biker, but I kept the fucking kept the scooter. That was rad as fuck. I really like that. Yeah, the unnecessary mirrors, all of that shit.
Yeah,
it's
great. I gotta check and see. Are the mirrors like just facing? What way are they facing? I suppose they're facing inwards towards the mirror. Then. Yeah.
So it's functional. Yeah, I suppose it could be.
Wherever he looks, he gets a nice view of himself. And, hey, handsome, how you doing?
Yeah, it's basically the front. The back of his wheelchair is the front of a really ostentatious. Mods.
Yeah, it's Vespa. Like he's sitting on a mod fucking bike backwards, basically. Yeah. Visually, I suppose, yeah.
Yeah.
Which is a cool guy way to sit in it, I suppose.
So they put on this play. The last part is going to be ad-libbed by ad-libbed.
As if that wasn't like fucking really suspicious. Like, hey, will you help me practice my lines? And he's like, hey, how come the back of this thing is blank? Oh, we're going to ad-lib the end of it. It'll be fine. I'm rad at ad-libs. Yeah.
Okay, so we got a whole like Christmas trees and stuff on the stage here. What's the huge like Stargate looking job you got set up here? Oh, that's fast for the final act. Don't worry about that.
Well, no, they do explain that. That's the gate they're going to use to bring
Jimmy
back.
It's a recreation of it's to actually make the gate like it is going to make a Stargate. Is their suggestion?
But it still seems very suspect.
Yes.
Yeah. It's not really. It's a bit ominous.
It's another giant robot. because Tommy's plan is actually to turn Moo into Jimmy by drugging her and then sending her against the earless queen that they have somehow summoned by their activities. I guess by recreating the festival in the tower.
Yeah, so they could be using the same method to summon the earless that they did in the tower. Or if not the same method, because they were using the thing from Gnome. Some kind of way of like getting the earless there. Like that was that whole giant earless queen, I think they called it, was like their part of their plan anyway.
Yeah. Also, the three sisters in the audience. And also, when on the drug, Moo gets memories of her brother at the festival 10 years previously, where he seems to understand that. Now, I couldn't whether he meant literally that he was earless, or whether figuratively that he'd found his people in.
He did drop out of the sky, and yeah, it could be figuratively. They're just like us. I mean, like, we literally prior to last episode said, "Hey, these earless that are here, they used to be people."
Yeah,
that kind of thing. So it could be literally or figuratively, depending on what way they're going to go with it, I suppose.
Yeah, and then she gets flashes to various pertinent lines of dialogue that other characters have said about these things in earlier episodes. And then, yeah, Marshall Ace learns that, yes, confusing, there's two people called Marshall in the episode. that Tommy has deceived him, and this is all to add a new assets to their army, not to actually bring Jimmy back.
Yes, I wasn't trying to bring Jimmy back. I was trying to make a new one.
Yeah.
Which, so far so good, I guess, from his plan.
I mean, is it that I don't know enough Who stuff? It seemed to be as big, obvious allusions to the band of the episode.
Like, I'm wondering, was a lot of the stage play and stuff was off of the...
I also wonder if some lines of dialogue have gone through that, like, translation...
that could be it as well. Because there's definitely, like, a lot of play, like, I am stating a dialogue. I was like, I don't recognize that lyric. So has that, like, been through a translator twice and I don't get it?
Yes, because it's like, the ends with, a certain man once said this, look, that all you need is love, but I say... love will rule all. I was like, okay, I don't know where that's from. That's clearly a reference to something, but when I looked it up as a lyric, couldn't find anything relevant.
All you need is love, I'm fine. But the second one I'm kind of caught on, yeah.
Yeah. And as I say, we know now that there's going to be a Beatles-themed episode by the looks of things. Mm. Yeah, so we find out how this ends. I'm going to guess it's probably going to be up to Nier and Echo to sort things out next week.
I was wondering, was the thing with Jimmy to be like saying that he felt like he was also like one of the earless? Was that like a thing of him saying like the people who consume music are different from players? Whereas like Jimi Hendrix was like a big fan of Bob Dylan and stuff, apparently brought like a sheet music of his stuff with him in a lot of places, that kind of thing. Whereas like you can be a consumer of this thing and also be a maker of this thing and a revolutionary maker of this thing.
Oh yeah,
that we're not so different, you and I, that kind of thing in the context of the show.
Possibly, but there's also like the weird clue of like the players all are born with knowing this particular song. We learn.
Yeah, and no one seems to still no one knows what music. Hey, what's that noise we keep making?
Yes.
Yeah. And a little kid has to explain to her, it's like, yeah, we all know this fucking song. I've been a player from birth. I'm a child soldier. Again, this is hilarious. These fucking kids in the mod jackets ordering people around.
That they've got this child army, but apparently they've not made outfits that would fit them. I guess they're going to grow.
They're hand-me-downs.
They're going to grow into them. Yeah. Not going to waste buying multiple coats, parkas for them. Just wear an Atlas.
I mean, like, they could die in war, and if they grow into them, all the better. Or if they don't, we can just fucking pass them down to the next generation of child soldiers that we pump out of our fucking child soldier school.
Mm. Well, that's the mod way. You go from charity shops trying to get into your look.
Secondhand stuff. Yeah.
But yeah, it's a funny, like, disturbing cute. When they're like putting the equipment together, and there's ones who've got like really long arm, like dragging the arms of their coats behind them. I feel like this is the show which has looked consistently the best throughout the season so far.
And like they're basing on visuals, but they've clearly been working hard at trying to nail those. And they've done a decent job of it, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's the character designs that really set us.
Sure.
It's fair play to them for kind of keeping those character designs moving fairly well and looking fairly consistent for the whole run of things. Because, you know, there is some of them have got like a lot going on. So it could be difficult to stay on top of it. But, yeah. You know,
I did like seeing the rougher colored sketches in the ending bit for the character designs. I was like, oh, that's a nice touch.
Yeah.
Just to stick those in.
Yeah, the original character design for Ace looks a lot more like Sting than how he's in cut it.
It's like, that's two on the nose. We gotta, we gotta change that.
Or rather, what Sting will look like in 10 years' time, perhaps. But,
it's gonna have a rough couple of years there. Like, when does he lose a leg?
He gets a sweet wheelchair though, so, you know.
Yeah, I was complaining about. Then, on to our final show of the evening. Wave, Listen to Me, episode 8, I Can't Tell You Over the Phone.
Okay, well, we'll email you our views on this. If
I'm sending you a carrier pigeon, it's cheaper / more expensive.
oh boy, a lot happens in this episode. And yet, not much, but it's, what are the main plot threads? The plot, the Minari's plot thread is she hasn't come up with an idea for the show that she's
going to do. Episode 3, yeah.
And so they want to get her to ring up one of her relatives and get into an argument with them.
So she rings up her dad about her stupid name. And her dad is dry as fuck. It's really funny.
Yes.
That was good material. I was like, get this man on the radio. He's great.
And the mix of his posters in his house. So many questions.
I was looking at the shelf of random collections. It's like, this is a very eclectic collection of statues or something, yeah.
Yeah, it seems to be film-related stuff, but like a very diverse range of film-related stuff.
Hmm.
From Catelyn and Charlie Catelyn, and then Charlie Hatley we see on a magazine cover as well. Looks
that's probably what attracted his eye to the magazine rack.
Sure.
Story.
And then the other story is that the manager has checked out of hospital and,
I'm all better, he says with his arm in a fucking sling.
Yeah, shows up in an alleyway with, I can't remember the woman's name, her brother. The woman who's been
Mackie is herself, and brother's is, I don't know, forgotten his name.
Crazy Bastard. Let's call him just Crazy Bastard. That's probably appropriate.
So there's that conversation going on in the alleyway outside the restaurant, and then there's the recording of the show at the radio station.
Because she basically left the restaurant while they were closing to go record the show, and they got sidelined by the manager and this fucking crazy motherfucker appearing. that guy was creepy. That guy was a genuine threat, and there's literally been a murderer in the show. So,
but I did like the fact that he knows that he's got problems, but he has not.
He hasn't done anything.
He just flies into a blind rage. Sorry about that.
I nearly killed another kid and his mom once. it's just my way.
Pushed me to the river and just watched him bob down into the water.
Lad's like, basically, I can't deal with this, but I know someone who can. I'm going to ring my sister up.
Yeah, because like he tries to talk to this guy, and he's like, I know my sister's been staying at the restaurant. I was like, no, I was going to ask the manager to keep her on. Like, she will leave now, and we'll get her out of here. And I was like, no, she's great, because obviously she doesn't want to stop working there and hanging around her crazy as fuck brother.
Yes.
But the way he's saying it is like, oh, she's been staying in the restaurant. That must be a terrible burden. He's looking for a way that his sister has fucked up, and she really hasn't. And it's like, actually, she's been staying at mine, and he doesn't really get to finish his thought before your man starts strangling him. That was
my sister's there too.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I was like, yes. I'll put you on the phone to her kind of thing.
We love having Mac here, but she's a delight. Absolute delight. Wonderful for children. Do you know what children are? Oh, child, I have a boy right here. It's so nice. It's going on and on and on. It's just completely diffusing this guy's threatening aura.
Because she's so chatty, he can't possibly make an accidental threat or strangle her over the phone. He's too distracted. Yeah. It's a really funny bit.
Yes. Yeah, I think it's like also like the power. She's got a powerful personality.
Her force of personality, just overwhelms his intense aura a bit. Yeah.
She knows how to deal with brothers. Yes. She knows.
She does. Yeah, she's got hands-on experience.
Yeah, I like the bit where they're back at the flat and she's getting silently mad at her brother for not picking up on her intention. It's like, are you the worst? But also the fact that she's sitting there with the beer can, holding the beer can in her mouth. talking with it.
So lazy, it's great.
Yeah. She's probably just used to that because, well, she's usually holding the child, but he's asleep in the next room. It's just a reflex now. Normally her hands are full.
But yeah, we learned she's, this has inspired her to, she now has something she's working towards, but we don't learn what she's working towards this episode.
Cause yeah, like according to her, her brother's plan was for her to go to like mixers and like marry off a bank manager or something. And they were all kind of like, that's a bit, I mean, like he's crazy, but that's kind of a real dick move.
She'd do well at a mixer though, to be fair.
No, she would. She's grand. She's great. but yeah, the fact that she has something that she wants for herself is good.
Yeah.
So meanwhile, Minare's plan to get into an argument with her dad is to suggest that she's going to change her name, which then just ends up with her getting into an argument with her dad because her dad tells her various stories of how she came by the name she's got.
What was your favorite story? I like the one of, like, he had three different lovers.
Three mistresses.
Yeah. I'd say, baby, I have to break it off. Because I'm going to be
there. That's okay, I understand. Like, but anyway, that's one thing. You named this baby after me, just so you got something to remember me by.
And all three of them asked that. I thought that was really funny. That's a good joke. Dear.
Yeah, and then, so then the writer comes in and he has prepared something. And it's the stuff from episode one with the bear. But in doing this, we learn that this is his last script because there's an award coming up that he's getting further in the awards for, which then we get a cut to the assistant director who has a concerned look on the face that the writer's leaving.
Because the shot of her, the guy who tried to pick her up earlier, Minari's like, oh, there's some sexual tension here. She picks up on that, but no one else is really picking up on this thing, apparently, anyway. Mm.
Yeah, she gets the cat eyes, doesn't she, when she thinks something's going on.
The mischievous cat eyes, yeah.
And then we get a flashback, presumably to the comedian that the producers was in love with.
Banging on about Monty Python.
Yes.
Yeah.
where she's reading an I Knew joke book.
Apparently they're into filthy shit.
Yes. And the real mark of a civilization that's evolving and reaching maturity is its capacity for telling dirty, dirty jokes. So this is emblematic of that. We should really be... and we get from this, all of this... If I were to have a child one day, you know, I'd want them for them to be in a world where they can make people laugh from the staff. So to that extent, I would name them Minare to laugh.
To laugh or to make laugh or something.
Make laugh.
Yeah. Because it's a weird kind of, verb or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. The comedy that she wants to do is, about self-depreciating.
Because, she's talking about Python, and it's like, I don't like humor that takes the piss out of something else, but when you're taking the piss out of yourself, you're not actively attacking
yourself,
or hurting anyone else. Yeah. So it's clean humor. Well, I mean, like, it can be dirty stuff, but it's about you. So it's everyone can enjoy it. Which, yeah, that's a general thing I like about humor. So.
But yeah, then you realize, okay, now we know exactly what the producer sees in her.
Yeah.
Because she's got the name and she behaves like that.
She can't help but take the piss out of herself.
Yes. Because they point out that, once again, in the last few minutes, the ad lib bit, you just poured all your personal grievances into it.
That makes it seem genuine, though.
I mean, like, it is genuine, so, yeah, that works out. I did like the way they just fast-forwarded, like, this was the first episode, remember this? And we'll just skip it. And it was just the entire bear fight without any interruption.
I'll say the reason why I think Listeners has got the edge in terms of maintaining production levels over this did have a few bits where it was clearly the schedule meant digital Zoom.
Yeah, that's fine.
In lieu of animation.
I'll accept it because the humor is still good.
Yes, yeah. Hmm. But it was kind of noticeable because I don't think it had been there in previous episodes, so it looked a bit, it was a bit of a a little bit of a step back, but it's still better.
I think
than a lot of
the only time I was okay with it was when you won, like, stretched out her animation model to the point of, like, not rezzing properly.
Yeah. Yeah. That was fine. Yeah, there is one where, yeah, the rez goes off because they've zoomed so much.
Yeah. I thought my stream spectrum was dying there for a minute. I was just, what's happening here?
Yeah, you've got to be, get it out on time. That's the thing.
Yeah.
You only have to be good, nice, or on time. You have to be one of those things. So,
you can have two of the things. Yeah.
Two of the things. Yeah. Two of the things will, people will like you if you can do two of the things, but, if
you can't do all
quality,
three.
But yes, you don't necessarily able to do all three. That is it. There is no more.
Let's not forget as well. There's a big cliffhanger because she's feeling. Oh. I mean, I was feeling pretty, that was pretty good. I had something to build on there, but I'm feeling positive about the experience. Another episode in the can. Oh, what's the guy text from somebody? Oh, it's the ex-boyfriend. He wants to meet up.
It ends on such a satisfying point because we know how episode one ended, and I was like, yeah, no, that was a good episode. We watched that episode of the radio show already. But then it ends on that, and you're just like, oh shit, this has been a long time coming.
Steppy motherfucker, I'm gonna give him a piece of my mind, by Christ.
But is she gonna let him off by the preview?
Well, we know it's like, oh, yeah. Once she's voiced that live on air, about this intent, is she actually going to act on it? Is she actually going to give him a dressing down? But maybe she is learning something about herself is that, I won't kill him, but I will, just try and play it cool and maybe get my money back as well.
The Funimation subtitles were particularly annoying on this episode, in terms of stacked, on-screen text translations and dialogue translations.
When someone's reading out the written text, so you didn't need it.
just make them two different colours so I know which one to focus on at a given time.
If a character has a note in front of them in a language I can't fucking read, and they're saying a thing, and you put that thing in inverted commas, I understand that they're reading the thing, and I don't need to fucking see what that thing says because they're literally reading it. Only in the case of they're reading something that actually isn't written down do I need the extra subtitles. It's silly.
Okay, but now that really is it. We've not watched anything else. All these things, as far as I know, are still ongoing. Let me take a quick double check, though.
Oh, so far so good, anyway.
Updates. No, the last thing, which is... we're running into problems, is the Seven Deadly Sins Anger's Judgment. Maybe it's best if Seven Deadly Sins anime has as much time as it needs after the last season.
I know it's all there, but I still haven't even looked at it as much as I enjoy that.
I understand it had some quality issues.
It fell off the comic as well. It's just like, again, if it's on the grungy molding, I'm never going to ever finish it.
Has it finished now? It must have finished now, surely. I know it did.
It is done, it did finish, didn't it?
It did, it did an epilogue and then it went, swerve. But there's loads more story after the epilogue.
Oh, the epilogue wasn't even a sequel. It was just a continuation. Okay.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, you're following the epilogue, and then it's like, oh shit, the story's still ongoing.
I guess there's more pause now.
Let it end and go like, and then they wrote no more, and you put those down forever.
Because that was the fun author's whole thing is that I got this, like, going to keep it around this number, I have it all kind of planned out for that.
Then your editor is and your editor say no. Guys come in, yeah.
I guess it may have finished because there's one chapter. The last chapter here has got a nice full colour front page. So I will assume that it may have finished now. But I can't look at it because Flash is blocked on this. Because the Crunchyroll Crunchyroll web manga reader is still uses Flash. I think he's just going to be lulled to falling to obsolescence, would be my guess, as soon as various licenses run out. Or unless they sell Crunchyroll to somebody else, and then whoever buys it does do something with it. Yes,
it's nice. Well, it was almost more of just an add-on rather than a major feature or thing. Anyway,
it's a pretty that they couldn't have gotten somewhere with it. It wasn't the best one, but I enjoyed it on the phone when it was working.
Yeah,
ended in March 25th is when it ended.
Okay.
So yeah, it went about 46 chapters longer than he'd stated.
That's not the worst lengthening, okay. But that is a considerable lengthening.
Yeah. I just respect, as a kind of time expected a bit more when it comes to, again, this is the end, though, similar. Even though we're getting more of, of Demon Slayer, say, but most popular king shit thing, for a lot of people in recent years. But, he said, no, I'm putting that story down, it's done. Now, there can be other things set in this world, but I'm not going to tie into this. This is that, so if it's when I see the end of this story, it's all there. And I can respect that a lot more rather than trying to artificially extend it with, Demon Slayer, Kimetsu no Yaiba, the new class.
Yeah. I mean, the first thing you're saying of the author having a distinct ending in mind, it makes it a full piece of work that you can enjoy. Whereas the other one is we just got to franchise it. Franchises don't need to have a satisfying ending. They just need to continue until they stop making money.
Righty-ho. That is everything for this week. We'll be back here. Let's find out, Niall, what day is a good day to record next week?
What day is a good day? Let's see. What are we back on? Back on days. I got able to see the sunrise again. So if we could do it on June 2nd at 8:30, or I could do it on June 3rd at 7:30, which would be better for people.
Third or 7:30 is better for me.
Which day is what?
Wednesday the 3rd, 7:30.
Yeah, Wednesday's fine.
Okay.
That means I can leave it exactly where it is in the calendar.
Hooray.
What's coming up on Secret of the Sailor Madness?
Clerks, the animated series. I'm getting onto my, researching what I call that, which involves watching, I'm going to just watch the first film of that to get a flavor for it again. It's been, I don't know, years now, I would say, since I've seen it, but it's odd how kind of things just stick out in your mind. It's been, I remember this scene, is it? And it's kind of a film where you've probably heard, bits of a quote, to death. There are good little lines and bits in there, are still effective and are still pretty good now. There is, some merit in there, though, despite, you might think of what a Kevin Smith villain entails nowadays, you're thinking, well, there was a point when he was, he was doing some genuinely, entertaining and fairly witty stuff.
There was a reason why people got interested in him in the first place. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. I think as has been noted, I've yet to get the cartoon at this moment in time, but, I think it's, that kind of latches on to more to that thread, drier, less fucking fart and weed joke kind of brand of humor, which Tank came to define as later out, but
Okay, on Dynamite the Brain, the next episode on the podcast feed will be the Animal Crossing movie, and the next episode on Twitch at twitch.tv/ Let's Go Brian will be me and Anthony talking now about the second half of the first season of Haikyuu. It would have just been a quarter of it, but I had computer problems this weekend, so I've now got time to watch the rest of the season.
And then the new batch of us is falling victim to production postponement.
That's fine, because we've got multiple seasons behind, so if it comes up on the wheel of topics again, we can just hop on to the second season. Otherwise, we'll be back here next week with more. Let's go! Goodbye!
Oi! See ya!